Hello and welcome to the latest Mooney on Politics podcast. Apologies once again for producing this a few days late. Just I've had a hectic few weeks in terms of work and business, which is not a bad complaint. I'm recording this on Sunday, June the 20th at about 2 p.m. And this is the article I wrote for the broadsheet last Monday, which was June the 14th. Now, that article looked at the fake pollster saga that had been going on the week before, which had all the three parties in a tizzy. And basically what I do is I pose the question here, look, was this something sinister as some claimed, or was it what I would believe a paradox? And by the way, I also admit to my own little bit of fake polling back in 1985 and show how it backfires. So here's my most recent broadsheet column. While All the President's Men remains the best Watergate-related movie there is, there are some really credible challengers. Indeed, there's a new five-part TV series called The White House Plumbers, currently in production. It's directed by the Veep producer and writer, David Mantell. And as far as I can make out, it's starring Woody Harrelson as E. Howard Hunt and Justin Theroux as Gordon Liddy. These were the leaders of the crew of plumbers who had broken into the DNC headquarters in the Watergate office complex. Certainly from what I've seen so far, it looks like it's a strong production, and certainly the people behind it, including Mandel, would point to being a classy, if not, and also quite funny project. The other contender is, however, is a little less well known, and that's a movie called Nasty Habits. This is a quirky movie from the early 70s, which manages not to mention Nixon, the White House, or even Watergate just even once. Instead, this adaptation of the Muriel Spark satire, which was called The Abbots of Crewe, it transposes the Watergate scandal to an English Benedictine convent, though actually the movie moves it to Philadelphia, and to an order of nuns led by Sister Alexandra, played brilliantly by Linda Jackson, in a quasi-Richard Nixon role. The plot of the book and of the movie is straightforward. Alexandra has schemed her way to the top of the cloister by secretly taping the confessions of her fellow sisters. She's surrounded by a couple of henchmen a la Ehrlichman and Alderman in the guise of Sister Wahlberger and Sister Mildred. Plus she has a globe-trotting Sister Gertrude who shuttles around the world's trouble spots like Henry Kissinger. And Sister Gertrude is played magnificently by the Greek actress Milena Mercouri. As far as I remember, Milena Mercouri ended up as an MEP. I could be wrong about that. I must go and check. In one scene, however, Alexandra calls Gertrude, asking how she can defend her actions while protecting her tapes. Gertrude, through a radio phone, advises her to tell them that this was a paradox. "What's a paradox?" asks Alexandra, to which Gertrude replies, "A paradox is something we must live with." So I mention all of this as Sister Gertrude's paradox is the word that came most to mind as the furore over the party polling raged in the newspapers and on the airways over the previous week. Ministers were rushed out to label Sinn Féin's 2015 polling as sinister, but no sooner had certain party headquarters sent the TDs out to condemn it all than the very same headquarters were revising the positions and conceding that they'd done it too, though they claimed that they had stopped it in either 2007 or 2011 or 2015 or whatever you're having yourself. Indeed, as I pointed out on the Today with Claire Byrne show on RT Radio 1 on Friday the 11th of June, there was nothing sinister. It was all just a paradox. Because every time I talk here about the latest national polls, I remark that political parties do not do their polling in the same way as national opinion polls. Now, it's a simple truth that political parties do their polling at a constituency level. Nothing wrong with polling, but there are rules by which it is done. And the primary rule is that you protect and maintain the anonymity of the people who are polled. This rule applied long before the publication and implementation of the General Data Protection Regulation, but it's a core principle of polling. And it's absolutely essential if you want the polling to be accurate. But doing constituency polls costs money, and the biggest parties have looked to cut their costs while safeguarding the accuracy of the results and the integrity of the process. Nothing revealed over the last few weeks has shown that any of them have undermined either. Indeed, if you read through the Sinn Féin manual, to their credit, they are absolutely meticulous about the need to maintain the anonymity and to maintain the integrity of the answers given by people in the poll. That said, the revelations about how folks represented them at the doors has been embarrassing. though not as embarrassing as how the parties have had to change their stories and admit to doing what they accused others of doing. Parties using volunteers make sense when you consider that the biggest single cost element in any poll is collecting the data. So, why would a party with a strong volunteer base, particularly a base of people who are used to going door to door and are used to chatting to people on the doors, why would they ask an agency to hire 50 to 60 people to spend a Saturday morning going door to door asking 500 to 600 members of the public to anonymously fill in sample ballot papers? As I said, parties have these volunteer canvassers who are well used to doing the legwork. So, while those on the doorsteps may be volunteers, is it fair to label them as fake pollsters? The task, after all, is to gather the representative samples requested by going to the streets in the constituency identified pollster and getting the responses. The critical number crunching work is done afterwards, either by experienced pollsters working in-house or by independent professionals hired in from the outside. So the only volunteer aspect of it is the people who are just going door to door. And their responsibility is to maintain the integrity of the poll, and it seems they're doing that. So I'd argue that a lot of this polling is real, not fake. The results are tabulated fairly. The individuals who are polled are not identified, and nobody ever gets to know how they voted on the sample ballot papers. So the main issue arising from the polls done by, say, for example, like by Leo Varadkar or Sinn Féin, is how the people going door to door represented themselves. Now, it seems that some parties and individuals have had to concoct elaborate backstories with fake company names, fake business card, fake IDs, 70-page manuals and other, etc., while others had a simple cop-on to send out experienced and savvy canvassers with the know-how how to be obtuse when asked who sent them. Rather than producing a fake business card, they simply shrugged and said, "Listen, I'm not too sure. I think it's one of the big parties. Look, all we've been asked to do is go door to door to collect these sample ballot papers. Look, if you prefer not to respond, prefer not to participate, I have no problem at all. Totally understand it. And move on." All of which leads us back to the central paradox. The fairness, accuracy, and impartiality of the poll result is ensured and protected by the person being surveyed not knowing who is doing the polling. This is the contradiction. Although it's a political party who wants the results, the person who's been asked cannot know that. As any professional pollster would confirm, if the person surveyed knew the poll was being conducted by or on behalf of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael or Labour, whoever, then it is possible that it would skew the respondent to give that party a higher preference than they might have otherwise done. Therefore, parties and independents doing these polls are reticent about saying it's us when they go to the door. Now, the easiest way out of this dilemma is to go to one of the many polling and marketing agencies in town and pay them what's necessary to look after the whole process from start to finish. And it seems that's what most parties are now doing, having tried to cut their costs and do it another way. Perhaps it's also due to a combination of parties finding it tougher to get people to volunteer in the way they used to, and voters now being more questioning and even sceptical about responding to somebody coming to the door, seeking their opinions for a poll, rather than the way they would have done, maybe responded a couple of decades back. Thus, the volunteers who once sent out polling are now deployed selling €50 national draw tickets. And in my opinion, that's not a better use of time or energy. So while it is not unfair to label the fictitious polling companies as fake, that does not mean the polls were fake or the people doing the legwork were anything other than sincere and honourable. We should be careful about generalising the fake pollsters' claim into one of fake polling. Fake polls are a completely different thing. One of the most pernicious examples of fake polling is what they used to call push polling, that was used a lot in US elections in the 80s and 90s, actually, right up to present day. This form of negative campaigning involves parties or groups or whatever, various interest groups, calling voters by poll and claiming to be from a usually fictitious polling company. Working from a carefully prepared script or often just from a robotic AI system, they ask the voter if you were aware that candidate X of party Y was a drug dealer or was a serial cheater or whatever, would you still vote for them? The purpose of the poll isn't to gather responses, it's to start a rumour. Start a rumour about the other party's candidates and to drive support away from them. One of the most egregious examples of this was the smear campaign mounted against Senator John McCain in 2006, South Carolina, as he sought the Republican nomination against George W. Bush. See, that's a fake poll with a malicious purpose. There are other kinds of fake polls that verge on the point of benevolent. And here, let me own up to my own role in one of these. The first time I ran for election was back in 1985. I was a Fianna Fáil candidate in the Rathmines City Council Ward for Dublin Corporation, as it then was. This was back in the day when Fianna Fáil could comfortably win two seats out of four across Dublin. And as the second Fianna Fáil candidate selected at the convention, it looked like my political career was about to take off at the age of 22. However, within days of being selected, Fianna Fáil headquarters decided not just to add one candidate, but to add two others to the tickets. So there was four candidates running in a four-seat constituency with the chance of winning just two seats. But my chances hadn't just been halved. They'd been slashed even further as one of the candidates added to the ticket was a publican whose premises in the Harold's Cross Road was barely 500 yards or metres from my own family's small hotel. So I was in big trouble. I was the youngest candidate, but I was also the most impecunious one. I was going to have to do something big to get myself noticed, but something that didn't cost me much money. So my campaign manager and myself decided that we'd organise a fake poll, but without the need for fake pollsters or even polling companies. So, armed with a few sheets of letter set, do you remember those things? They cut out like the transfers, the letters that you rub onto paper, a typewriter, some scissors, a bottle of glue for sticking stuff down, not for sniffing, and access to a photocopier, we set about creating an opinion poll that showed me set to win the second Fianna Fáil seat. Key to this was a detailed report from an old and from a very real opinion poll done a few years earlier in the neighbouring Dublin South Central constituency. So we took the cover spreadsheet, removed the candidate names and the area headings. So thus Crumlin became Rathmines, Dermot became Rathgar, Walkinstown became Dartry. Now we had the poll and what looked like a spreadsheet to back it up. But how do we get it out there? Now, anyone who's been around politics will know that most political parties have people who have an abiding need to tell anyone and everyone how much they know. And my constituency organisation at the time was blessed with an awful lot of them. So we photocopied our freshly baked poll and circulated directly and indirectly to certain members of the party, urging them not to share it, knowing full well they would. So within a few days, it was in the local free sheet newspapers under the headline, Mooney set to win second Fianna Fáil seat. So our fake poll had got the results it wanted, only it didn't. I'd forgotten that in politics, as in physics, for every actual there's an equal and opposite reaction. The local newspapers came out a full week before polling day, so my cherished running mates had both the time and the resources to redouble their efforts in the final days. Indeed, you couldn't move and pair in your Rathgar Rathmines for personal literature or posters, and back then that stuff was kind of a rarity. My fake poll backfired. I came fourth out of the fourth candidates, and my first foray into electoral politics ended in failure. And I haven't touched a fake poll since. Well, not intentionally. Okay, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Next week's will hopefully be available to you by Wednesday, June the 23rd, if I can get my act together. And in the meantime, I hope you enjoy what's left of Sunday and of the weekend, and you can get out to enjoy the glorious weather. Take care. God bless. Bye.